at the Eccles Center, I've been spending a huge amount of time digging through 16th century ship's logs and accounts of voyages toward exploration of the New World, both in English and in French. When you spend a lot of time looking at this kind of material, you soon notice that there are no women anywhere on any of these ships. And I just want to say that this work is in part to imagine, you know, that women might actually go to sea one day. This is I did a practice-led PhD, so which I think of in a scientific terms of I made experiments and I wrote about them. And so this was one of the works that I made in the process of my research. And this paper reflects on the material appropriation and transmutation of predominantly male-authored forms of narratives into female-narrated digital literary spaces. Notes on the Voyage of Alan Girl is a work of fiction, yet its frequent references to actual events, places, persons, and texts are entirely intentional. Part ship's log, part sea chart, part sailor's yarn, part children's book, part Victorian nonsense poem, and part computer-generated narrative. This hybrid work detourns, appropriates, conflates, and confabulates characters, facts, fictions, and forms of narratives of sea voyages undertaken over the past 2,340 years, plus ou moins, into the North Sea, into the North Atlantic, and beyond, into territories purely imaginary. So this sea chart that forms the background of the work is a cartographic collage of sea charts of the South Orkney Islands. So the Orkney Islands are north in Scotland, but there are South Orkney Islands in the South Atlantic Ocean. Now, sea charts and maps, but sea charts in particular, are always composite texts. They're composed of stratified layers of mostly textual accounts of passages and logs and soundings of the ocean depths and readings of compass directions and currents and weather phenomenon observed by generations and generations of pilots of sea at sea. In this work, details from printed charts, so this is a printed chart of the South Orkney Islands and the Scotia Bay, have been broken apart and rearranged and reoriented to suit web navigation. So this is scalable, so if the screen is a different size, then all of these things shift and move. And this sea chart is actually quite an incoherent landscape. And I say incoherent using Alexander Galloway's term. He says that coherence and incoherence operate on a sort of continuum. It's never exactly one or the other. And he talks about an incoherent aesthetic, which he says tends to unravel neat masses into their unkept and incontinent elements. This incoherent aesthetic of this cartographic background of this work is to me very analogous to what it is actually like at sea, where the shifting of winds and waves and tides and ocean currents is in constant motion and not fixed, like when you're moving across a land map. You're moving. When you're moving across a sea chart, everything's moving. This blue space in the corner has these scalloped edges are intended to be evocative of a sort of mid-20th century postcard design. There was a kind of period where all postcards had this scalloped edges. And this postal association suggests that this story is from another place, from another time. And Irit Rogoff argues that the postcard is a complex artifact in which image and text are reversible, in which public and personal collide and collapse. So famously, Derrida frames this reversibility within a sequence of relational dialectics. He says that One does not know what is in front or what is in back, here or there, near or far, nor what is the most important, the picture or the text, and in the text, the message or the caption or the address. So this postcard image, the text and the image have been collapsed. They're both presented on the same pictorial frame. And this image, which isn't fantastic projected, but Mary Elizabeth just set the scene for it. This is actually taken, a photograph taken at the edge of the Halifax Harbour, actually Shabakto Head. So that was, thank you for setting that up. You've already showed the map. And it has no horizon, and the weather is shit, actually. So you can't tell where you are or what's land or what's sea or what's particulate in between. And so, you know, just as the evocation of a South Orkney island creates an Orkney island where previously there had just been Orkney, the evocation of Nova Scotia or New Scotland creates an Old Scotland where there had just been Scotland before. And this persistence of old world names and new world territories creates shadow places, these kind of doppelgangers born, as Freud suggests, of the constant repetition of the same features, the same characters, the same destinies, the same misdeeds, even the same names through successive generations. So when Freud talks about the doppelganger, he talks about it in terms of people, but I would argue the same could be said for doppelganger places. And so this whole narrative unfolds in an incoherent aesthetic of inversions and uncanny returns. The narrative of it itself, so Gwen set this part up for me. It's good to go late. So this narrative, generative narrative text over here is composed of fragments from these are a combination of de torn fragments and other made up fragments from a wide range of fluid and fanciful and fictional floating places from diverse literary, historical, and archival sources. I don't know if in French you know about The Owl and the Pussycat. Do you know the poem The Owl and the Pussycat? It's pas bien connu, huh? No. So in English, it's just to say that it's very, very common. So everybody would know the story of the owl and the pussycat who went to sea in a beautiful pea-green boat. It's a Victorian English nonsense poem of the same generation as Alice in Wonderland by Edward Lear. So this title refers to the owl and the pussycat, but it's... The pussycat has been replaced by girl. So there's a pretty interesting dynamic going on in the owl and the pussycat, where the owl is clearly in charge, and the pussycat is quite passive and just goes wherever the owl wants to go, and in this beautiful pea green boat. And it's important to note that Lear says, pussy hyphen cat, so not just a cat, a pussy cat. And this hyphen in particular is really useful, and especially on this idea of fragment. So Mackenzie Wark talks about, and Mackenzie Wark's writing on détournement, he talks about that key to any practice of détournement is identifying the fragments upon which it might work. And so the hyphen in Lear's pussy cat creates a fragmentary creature. And this idea of fragmentary creature actually comes from Jean-Jacques Le Cerc's writing on Victorian nonsense poetry. And he's talking about the mock turtle. So this idea of the pussy cat becoming a fragmentary creature. So pussy, for the English in the room, the term pussy has been used to refer to a small cat since the 1570s, but the vulgar use of the term pussy to refer to a woman as a sex object did not come about until the 1870s. And Lear's poem, this Owl and Pussycat poem, was published in 1871. So it's commonly thought of as a cute poem for kids, but actually when the owl sings to the pussycat in the first verse, he refers to her simply as pussy. implying that he thinks of her as a sex object. Oh, lovely pussy, oh pussy, my love, what a beautiful pussy you are, you are, what a beautiful pussy you are. The hyphen in Lear's Pussycat provides an opening for détournement, invites the invention of a new creature. The passive pussycat has been replaced by girl, a character who is not defined by owl, but rather by the variable studious. So just up here where it says adventurous, just under the cross immediately, that's the cursor. Watch that space. So that variable called in the opening sentence will constantly keep changing. So if I do that, see, rational, curious, ardent, serious. So again, as Gwen was talking about fragments, you know, these are arguments. Programmatically, this is a variable string containing all of these words. So girl is an argumentative creature, composed of multiple arguments. And these multiple definings of girl are informed by a number of other narratives of female castaways. There aren't very many female castaways even in literature. So in J.M. Coetzee's novel, Foe, the castaway Susan Barton insists, "I am a free woman who asserts her freedom by telling her story according to her own desire. Yet throughout the book, she seeks a male author to write of her adventures." And in the Canadian novelist Douglas Glover's novel, Elle, a character based on the real-life 16th century castaway Marguerite de Roque, who's French, Marguerite is constantly correcting her male biographer who's trying to exaggerate her narrative. Marguerite de Roque was cast ashore on an island off Newfoundland by Sieur Roberval, who was at that time the Viceroy of Canada or something, so sketchy. So in this story, girl does not seek a biographer. She's not trying to get anybody else to write her own story. She's asserting through the variable ideas, but the girl had her own approach. So this word approach is in a variable string. So the girl has her own books to write, life to live, line of inquiry, mode of questioning, plans, research, etc. So see up here at the top where it says apple green. This is a reference to Edward Lear's pea green boat, the beautiful pea green boat. And this variable string initially contained bottle green, beetle green, grass green, gray green. And later I started adding other variables because, you know, this is a digital text and it it's an assemblage, and as Deleuze and Guattari note, that assemblages are in constant variation, are themselves constantly subject to transformations. So not only are these fragmentary creatures, but they're constantly subject to change. So I could change this again. And the same could be said for any sailor's yarn. It's a characteristic of sailor stories, is that they're constantly being elaborated and changed to suit their audiences, forever twisting, knitting, knotting, and unraveling. Jessica Pressman suggests that an aesthetic of bookishness unites novels that pursue a thematic interest in depicting books as characters and focal points of narrative action, serving as physical places of refuge for traumatized characters. Pressman goes on to say that born digital works exploit the aesthetic of bookishness by adapting the appearance of paper and translating the print-based reading practices onto the screen. So Bertrand set that up for us earlier. But I completely disagree with this distinction that she makes. I find it somewhat spurious, mostly because within this paradigm, Notes on the Voyage of Alan Gerlich exhibits an aesthetic of bookishness rather more in keeping with novels than with born digital texts. Books drive girls' actions and inform her decisions. The variable books, so she says, according to my books, oh look, which it even has a typo in, fantastic. So, but luckily this is an assemblage, so I can change that. So The variable books contains textbooks, library books, manuscripts, maps, charts, sources. The girl does not seek refuge in these books. Rather, she uses them as tools, actively. And though she and Owl voyage through seas unknown, never to be heard from again, girl is not a traumatized character. She is not like Coetzee's castaway, Susan Barton, waiting for a book to be written to set her free. Girl is actively engaged in writing her own story. The last line of the narrative contains a variable called notes, which calls charts, diaries, drawings, hand-drawn maps, journals, letters, lists, and so on, suggesting that this whole photographic, cartographic, and textual collage is a manifestation of the notes kept by girl on this voyage. So the list she kept constitutes the entirety of the experience we have left of this latest voyage. So this will constantly keep changing. So this is the narrative text, and then all of these horizontally scrolling texts are different kinds of notes. So this big text that we see here mostly refers to the weather and that's going on in that image. So don't fret, sea wet, mist and haze, come inland. The smaller blue text that appears here but not when you want it to, is mostly concerned with cartographic representations. Excellent timing. So here be dragons. And this refers to other kinds of texts that are found on sea charts. This text here is a razor poem of the second voyage attempted by the great 16th century navigator John Davies for the Northwest Passage in 1586. And the line begins, May 7th, departed from Dartmouth. So John Davies, there are lots of places in Canada named after Davies, and the Davies Strait and Davies Inlet. But he was from Dartmouth, Devon, which is just down the river from where I now currently live. And so I'm a little bit obsessed with John Davies. And so this very strange narrative resonance emerges between Dartmouth, Nova Scotia, which is just across the Halifax Harbor from where this photograph was taken, and John Davies, who sailed from Dartmouth, Devon. And in this text now, the voice of this 16th century navigator is appropriated by the character girl. The pink text that appears here is mostly involved with communications, technologies, and a string of numbers appears at the end of this text, which are latitude and longitude coordinates, and they sort of trail off into the North Atlantic, and which might suggest that this is a doomed voyage, and the fate of which will remain a mystery. But that's only if you know about latitude and longitude coordinates. So, bringing together all of these different modes of annotation and these different, more than the text themselves, the different kinds of text. I mean, first of all, they're obviously representative of my own research into the subject. Girl is certainly not autobiographical, but we share many of the similar research interests. And having these texts moving on the screen, and they also respond to mouse action, so they stop, like it'll never be the same way. Prompted me to think about it in terms of live performance and how I might make a performance script out of it, to see how these different kinds of voices might operate together. So I created a script which was performed in Paris at Cherchez le Texte, at Le Cube. It's also been performed at the British Library, where I did a lot of this research, which was nice, and it's been performed in lots of other places. But then the performance script, which became a published text, which was published in a literary journal, and I also made a bookwork of it, which is illustrated by my friend Elizabeth Beliveau and is currently for sale from my knapsack, which we can discuss later. Within this performance script, I divided it up into two voices, the narrative and the notes. And the opening narrative section of the script undermines the authority of an authorial voice by interrupting the linear narrative flow of the story and the grammatical structure of its sentences. These interruptions are achieved through the insertion of some but not all of the arguments contained in the variable string. So the first, I'll read you the first sentence of the performance script. An owl and a girl most adventurous, curious, studious, set out, set sail, sailed away. In a bottle green, beetle green, pea green, boat, sieve, skiff, vessel, a beautiful ship shape, seaworthy, craft, raft, wooden shoe, certainly, though a good deal wee bits, tad too small, high in the stern to suit the two of them. So these sentences are slightly grammatically impossible. Then in the notes section, I took all of these different lines and broke them up. Some semblance of their differences retained by indentation. But in the live performance, distinctions between girls' categories of observation, be they climactic, cartographic, quotidian, or pertaining to communication, dissolve into one voice. And so through this process of transmutation, a new narrative voice emerges. Though reconstituted from girls' own notes, the narrative retains its incoherence. It refuses to coalesce into either a linear narrative or into any conventional poetic form. Rather, it finds a strength in détournement, transmediation, transformation. Notes on the Voyage of Owl and Girl creates a new narrative context in which overwhelmingly male narratives of seafaring, exploration, discovery, and adventure can be performed by a new narrator, a girl most adventurous, courageous, curious, with her own books to write and stories to tell. Thank you.